Hello and welcome to Undivided on this Christmas Eve Eve. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. And thank you to those of you who have subscribed to the show, the best Christmas gift I could ask for. If you have not subscribed already, remember, you get a bonus episode every single week and you get to help support the show and the mission of the show. You can do that in two ways, patreon.com/undivided, or you can become a contributor on my locals community, brandicruz.locals.com. All right, coming up today, you know, we've been talking, complaining a lot about the crime crisis, about laws around taxes and spending and emergency power reform. And I know sometimes it can feel like you're frustrated about all these things, but then there's nothing you can do about it. Well, there is something you can do about it, but it's a very time-sensitive thing. And so we're going to discuss it today, and I hope that next week, early next week, you can take action on it. So I'll give you something tangible that you can do about some of these issues that have just been bothering the hell out of those of us with the brain. Also coming up, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has successfully petitioned for a grand jury to investigate Big Pharma over claims about the COVID-19 vaccine. We'll have a discussion about that on Florida Report. Plus, there was a huge drug bust in King County, Washington, which, of course, has been a sanctuary county, has been a place, well, obviously it's liberal and progressive. And, you know, I think just the size and scope of this drug bust and the kind of narcotics that were seized in it, I cannot understand how it's not a wake-up call for Democrats to really start prioritizing security at the southern border. So we're going to have a conversation about that as well. Also, a couple housekeeping things. The storm was crazy. So in the Seattle area, we had this insane, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and it was like I could hear like little shards of glass like pounding outside of the house. And I don't know about you guys, but I woke up and our deck, the snow that had been there was just ice. The dogs were slipping, sliding everywhere, trying to get out and go to the bathroom. And then I was like, well, I got to come in and do the show today. I go out to my car, and you have to understand, I grew up in one of the coldest places in America. I grew up outside Fargo, North Dakota. Like, I have dealt with my fair share of severe weather. My SUV was encrusted in ice. It was like this thick. It was like a half an inch thick. It was insane. And so poor me, I'm such a like the helpless victim. I turned the car on and blasted the defrost. And then I texted my fiance. I was like, come help me. Please come help me. So I hope you guys were safe out there. I know some people lost power. But it was just a totally wild, wild day. So be safe if you're traveling somewhere for the holidays. I maybe shouldn't have come in, but I'm pretty confident in my driving skills. But one true housekeeping thing. So there has been an issue that's been ongoing since December 5th with Apple Podcasts. For those of you who listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, new episodes weren't populating. Finally have been able to fix that issue. So if you listen on Apple Podcasts and you look at the show, you should see updated episodes. So today being the latest episode that will be posted. If you don't, try unfollowing the show and then following the show again, and it should be up to date. If not, send me a message, send me an email. But thank God that issue was addressed, because it is hell on earth trying to get in touch with anybody at Apple. But they took care of it just before Christmas. So great news. All right, I want to start today by talking a little bit about the drug crisis. You know, we know in Washington State, and frankly in a lot of major cities and across the West Coast, that, for instance, the homeless crisis, it's fueled by drugs. I believe what we see happening on our streets and with the crime, frankly, is a result of the drug crisis. A lot of the petty crime that people commit is to further a drug habit. A lot of people who are homeless or that way because they either have a mental health issue or they have an underlying drug addiction that is really keeping them from turning their lives back around. So there was this massive drug bust in Berrien, Washington this past week. $10 million worth of drugs, street value, seized in this by the King County Sheriff's Office and the Berrien Police Department. They are describing this as a massive cartel operation, according to Fox 13 News. So they believe that this is a Mexican cartel situation. So they had been working on this for months. It was called Operation P-22, aimed at a specific branch of the cartel. that they believed were trafficking drugs up to Washington State. So here are the narcotics that were seized in this operation, including there was also 3 rifles and 5 handguns that were taken off the streets. 31 pounds of heroin, 25 pounds of fentanyl powder. So what we know about fentanyl is just the tiniest little bit can kill someone. And we've seen people from all walks of life killed by fentanyl thinking they were ingesting something else. So 25 pounds of fentanyl powder, 400 pounds of meth, and 500,000 fentanyl pills. 500,000 fentanyl pills, every single one of them with the capability to take the life of a Washingtonian. And again, no doubt in the minds of investigators that this was a cartel operation, and great work for these investigators, by the way. A few things I think this highlights. There has and continues to be a true refusal from Democrats to take the issue at the southern border seriously. You know, and I've talked about this many times, how you've got these two groups who are like, it's either strictly a humanitarian issue or it's strictly a national security issue. And obviously it's both of those things. We cannot deny that there are people coming to our southern border who are fleeing unthinkable situations. And they're looking for a better life. And that's what America is here for. That's what our laws around asylum are here for. But we also can't deny that tens of thousands of people are crossing the southern border undetected. They aren't coming up and making asylum claims. They're sneaking in through ranch lands and private property, through unsecured parts of the border. How do you think 500,000 fentanyl pills get up to Washington State, 400 pounds of meth, 25 pounds of fentanyl powder? And this is, I think, why it's truly egregious, this sort of position of ignorance that Democrats take about what the crisis at the southern border is doing to our country. It's killing people. Like I said, every single one of those 500,000 fentanyl pills has the potential to kill someone. So you are allowing cartel criminals to bring drugs into our community that can and will kill people. And you don't want to say anything about it because what? It just isn't politically palatable to your base. This is something that I really truly cannot understand. How on the border issue, the two sides can't come together and say, hey, let's make sure for humanitarian reasons, those who have legitimate asylum claims can get into this country. And let's make sure that people who don't can't. People can't cross into the United States as easily. I don't understand. I know they both sides want to use the political football back and forth and point fingers and, oh, Biden's not going to the border. And, oh, Republicans are putting up shipping containers on their own and that's not going to do anything. And meanwhile, nothing gets done. And meanwhile, people are dying. You know, I do not want to hear, particularly a Democrat, a member of Congress, whatever it is, complain about drug overdoses and fentanyl. And talk about, put out statements and press releases about the scourge of fentanyl, the dangers of fentanyl, unless they are simultaneously going to acknowledge where the fentanyl is coming from and take that issue seriously. You can't pretend to care about people dying on our streets from drug overdoses while turning a blind eye to what's happening at the southern border. I think the border crisis is the single best example of the failure of the two-party system to actually get things done on behalf of the people they serve, and the absolute incompetence of government. And I really believe the incompetence of government is because of the two-party system. But I don't understand how you don't look at something like this. And thank God the King County Sheriff's Office even has the resources to be able to do an investigation like this. Because with our number of police officers dropping by the day, these are the types of investigations that get shelved. You know, they're trying to, in Seattle, have enough people to respond to 911 calls. And when you have fewer officers and you can't even respond to life or death emergencies in a timely manner, they're not going to let people continue to do 2-month-long investigations into drug trafficking rings. That's the kind of stuff that's going to be put on the back burner. So you have a complexity of issues here. But so much of this work, you know, they wouldn't have to do this work, I think, if there were a real attention at what's happening at the southern border. So that's what I'd like to see. You know, I do think Republicans have acknowledged the national security crisis at the southern border, obviously, but they also need to move past the point of using it as this political talking point And there needs to be a real effort to come up with solutions to work together to that end. And Democrats, I mean, they're the ones in charge. So I think also for states where these drugs are coming to, I mean, when news of this came out, King County Executive Dow Constantine, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, Washington Governor Jay Inslee should have said, we need to do something. We need the federal government to do something at the border because deadly drugs are coming into our community and they're killing people. And you talk, you claim to care about gun violence. You know, you're down in Olympia passing all these or proposing all these bills to limit people's ability to get a gun. Meanwhile, 5 handguns, 3 rifles in the hands of these dangerous cartel people who are slinging deadly drugs on our street. And like, silence from Jay Inslee and from the Democrats who pretend to care so much about guns. Those are the people who aren't supposed to have guns. Those are the people who don't need guns. I'd like to see you put just as much attention on them as you do on law-abiding citizens who are just minding their own business, trying to survive. So again, the border crisis to me, it is a make or break issue in this country, for this country, for a variety of reasons. Yes, immigration is so vital to who we are and what we are as a country, but I more and more every day, that phrase that you don't have a country without a border is so, so true. And there must be an acknowledgement of just how serious things have become. Speaking of government incompetence and the true price of it, you know, I think one of the things that frustrates me the most is just how much money is wasted due to absolute ineptitude. So there was a story, King 5 News in Seattle, that talked about this group that... it's a advocacy group for people with disabilities, Disability Rights Washington, DRW. They have filed a motion in federal court, and they want the Washington State Department of Social and Health Services to be fined $250 million for leaving mentally ill inmates in Washington jails as opposed to somewhere like Western State Hospital where they can get help for their underlying mental illness. So there was originally a case about this in 2014 where the judge in the case, Marsha Peckman, ended up directing the state to comply with a certain timeline from when someone is deemed incompetent to stand trial to when they are sent to an institution or a hospital to get help, as opposed to just being held in a jail facility that might not have the types of services that they need. So what Judge Peckman ruled in that 2014 case is that within 7 days, a mentally ill inmate has to be transported from a jail to a psychiatric hospital. And it is true that the state has failed to meet that 7-day deadline. You know, there was sometimes when it was taking months and months on end to transport one of these patients to a psychiatric facility. And what the Disability Rights Washington claims, and what they say is, you know, the state has failed to meet the sanctions that you've set. So we want you to fine them $250 million to further incentivize them meeting these deadlines. And they say it's detrimental, essentially, to these mentally ill people to be held in a jail as opposed to getting help at a psychiatric hospital. So look, I get it. I tend to agree that if you have someone who's seriously mentally ill, jail is not the best place for them, a secure psychiatric hospital where they can get help and the access to whatever they need is much, much better. So I'm not disagreeing with that. But you look at here the price of incompetence. We just talked about drugs being a contributing factor to the homeless crisis. Just as much of a contributing factor is mental illness. We have a huge, huge mental health crisis happening in the greater Seattle area, really up and down the West Coast. Similar major cities are seeing a similar problem. And we have seen this manifest itself in really troubling ways. You know, we've done stories on what we call repeat offenders who have been in and out and in and out of jail in Seattle, sometimes up to 100 times. And they'll go out and they'll, for instance, there was this one guy who he'd been in and out and in and out. He threw like coffee on a baby, just a random person. There's been random attacks on pedestrians in downtown Seattle. So it becomes really serious, but it also becomes really frightening as well when you have people who are that mentally ill. And under Washington Governor Jay Inslee, Western State, which is the state's largest psychiatric hospital, lost its federal accreditation. So you have this ineptitude, incompetence that has had this real ripple effect across our mental health system in Washington. And now it's to the point where we can't even keep up. We cannot even keep up. There are so many people in the throes of mental health issues in our state, on our streets, who are getting involved in the criminal justice system that we can't even keep up. And now the state might be fined $250 million for failing to keep up. And who, you know, where's that money come from? It's not, the government doesn't make money. It comes from us. It comes from tax money. So here we are as the freaking taxpayers of Washington, just for whatever reason, putting our faith in the same people over and over and over who have given us these outcomes. We are the ones who get victimized by the criminally mentally ill on the street. And then we are the ones who get re-victimized when those mentally ill people just get in this revolving door of a criminal justice system. And then it is our tax money that goes to pay fines when the state doesn't handle mentally ill inmates as they're supposed to. So it's like, we're the ones who are bearing the burden of all of this. And, you know, I think by and large, people in Washington state are very compassionate. And we want, I mean, you want someone who's mentally ill to get the help they need. And we also understand that these aren't, in most cases, inherently bad people. They have a mental health issue that's driving their criminal behavior. And that's very, very sad. But something needs to be done with them to make sure they're not out there endangering people or hurting people. And so, you know, the state has put itself in this situation, which is untenable. They allowed the mental health crisis to just get so much worse over the last 10 years. Who's been in charge for 10 years? Jay Inslee. It's gotten worse and worse every year. People keep voting the same people in. Nothing is done. Nothing meaningful is done to improve the mental health system. And then the criminally mentally ill crisis is out of control in cities like Seattle. And, you know, you have businesses packing up and leaving because of how bad things have gotten. Repeated targeting. You know, I think of the poor Amazon worker who was hit in the head with a baseball bat at random. Clearly, that's a dude who's not well in the head, right? So we're dealing with all these consequences of failure from politicians. And so we're dealing with it in a very real way every day. And then we're also dealing with it in our pocketbooks. And I don't, you know, it's for this reason, I just don't want to hear the state of Washington complain about not having enough money for everything. It's like, well, why don't you get your freaking house in order? $250 million because you can't meet this deadline because you let the system get so bad. So it's really frustrating the how much we pay financially and in real terms about how much we pay because of the government's incompetence. And I really wish people could let go a little bit from their diehard political affiliations to see that we can't keep doing the same thing over and over. We can't keep putting our faith in the same people over and over. I mean, let's say that you elect a Republican for governor or whatever it is, or you vote for a Republican, even though, you know, that's not a party you typically vote for. I would ask you what the worst thing that could happen would be. That they serve 4 years, they don't fix any of these problems, and then you go back to having a Democrat in charge. I mean, and I'm not advocating for any particular Republican candidate, but I just feel like at some point we have to decide we need to do something different. Even if it makes us get out of our little political comfort zone, we have to try something different, or none of this is going to get any better. So speaking of trying something different, you know, we claim complain a lot on the podcast, and I see a lot of your complaints on social media about laws that have been passed by the state legislature in Washington. You know, the police pursuit law comes to mind, which dramatically limits the instances where police can pursue a suspect, and just so many other really bad bills that have come up. You know, I've been advocating for emergency power reform, something that there just does not seem to be the political will to do in Olympia. But, you know, I think what we try to also do on this podcast is encourage you to put your frustration into action, to turn your frustration into action, to do something about it when there's an opportunity to. And I'm really happy to say that there is an opportunity to change some of these things on an individual basis, but you have to take action really quickly. So I want to talk about Let's Go Washington. It's an effort with 11 different initiatives covering topics from public safety to cost of living to good governance. And they're really all designed to sort of undo some bad laws that have been passed in recent years. A friend of mine, Brian Haywood, is the mastermind of this, and he was nice enough to come on the show to talk about the concept and what you can do to be part of it. Brian, welcome to Undivided. Introduce yourself for folks who aren't familiar with you.
Hi, my name is Brian Haywood. I'm a 12-year resident of Washington State. I moved here as an economic refugee from California. Came seeking less government intrusion, and it was enjoyable for a while, and then it seemed like things sort of started moving in the California way. So I've become involved a little bit in trying to fix some of the things that got broken in the last, I would say, last 4 or 5 years.
That's so funny that now you're in Washington as an economic refugee. Are you sure you don't want to turn around and seek refuge in another state instead of fixing this one?
yeah, that's that. I've got friends that have done that. I've got friends that have moved to other states, but I, having moved once, I don't think you can run away from it. Number one, and number two, my family grew up. I basically we raised them in Washington, and my wife and I both enormously love the state, the beauty, and the just every time I fly into Seattle, I'm just amazed at how gorgeous it is from the air. And when we first moved here, you know, Seattle was this, it's like a sort of this emerald city. I mean, that's the name of it. And we went in and we're like, wow, it really is just this almost this gorgeous utopian kind of place. Great restaurants, entertainment. What a wonderful place to live and raise your kids. And now if my friends fly into Seattle, I say, be really careful about staying in Seattle. You might want to think about another city. And that's really sad. It's happened so fast.
Yeah, and I didn't know that you and I came to Washington just about the same time. I've been here 12, 13 years, and I've seen that same change. And you're right, it has been really, really quick. And we came here not so long ago that we can't remember how nice it used to be about a decade ago.
Exactly. Exactly.
The odd thing about you to me, and this is going to sound blunt, is it maybe it's not odd. I mean, is it fair to say you're a wealthy, you're doing okay financially?
I've been financially blessed.
So I guess I would wonder, I think there's a lot of people who would, in your position, would just sort of not bother, I guess, would be out on vacation doing whatever and not concerning themselves with the types of things that we're going to discuss here momentarily. So I'm not rich, so I don't know what it's like to have a lot of money, but part of me thinks I would be on a beach somewhere, Brian.
Well, I'll tell you, I grew up really poor, actually. And so I've seen what it's like not to have any money. I've been middle class along the way for quite a number of years, and then had a couple of successful events that kind of put me in this space. And it's not a place I grew up with. I didn't silver spoons were something you saw in museums, not something you were fed with. And one of the things that I think you face when you have some success financially, one of the things you face then is, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah.
What's it for, right? Is it for Lamborghinis? Is it for lifestyle? Is it for my family? How do I use it? And I'm certainly going to enjoy some of the benefits of it, but I think the thing I've been impressed with the most is that it's something you can do things with. That sounds sort of silly, but you can be creative, you can make things, you can and then this is something that I think has always been close to my heart, is this idea of doing something that it's sort of a it sounds a it's a cliche, and I feel almost silly saying it, but when you're a Boy Scout, which I was a Boy Scout as a young kid, and the thing that you get drilled into your head is you leave a campsite cleaner than when you came in. And I think that's sort of an idea that goes along with responsibility as an adult. You try to leave the campsite cleaner,
I like
and
that.
so part of it is that, right? If that makes sense in a too not too cheesy of a way of saying it. Or maybe it is cheesy, but whatever.
I like cheesy. It's okay. Let's talk about Let's Go Washington, because one of the things I really like about this is I think for folks like us who are frustrated with the state of things, it can be easy just to be really mad about it. I can yell about it on 100 podcasts. I can post about it on social media. But having an avenue to send people to do something with their frustration, I think, is much more productive, and it's incredibly important. And so that's where Let's Go Washington comes in. So before we get to the individual things that folks can do and can sign right now, what's the concept, generally speaking, behind Let's Go Washington?
Well, there were two pieces to it, and you hit on the first one. as I would go around the state and listen and talk to people, I would hear a lot of complaints directed both at their own party, but then also at the state in general. And secondly, I would go to events and people are just frustrated. And it was easy just to sort of blame the leaders. Oh, they're not doing this. They're not doing that. And they is this sort of vague. Who are you even talking about? And so one of the things as we were thinking about this was this concept of let's see if there's something we can do that's meaningful that people can get involved in themselves. The second piece for it, I think that's, and this is really important, as we were putting together the ideas, one of the things I didn't want to do is to arrogantly say, oh, we're gonna change Washington. We're gonna structurally make it into something different than it was. These initiatives, every single one of them, if you look at them, are basically fixing very small fundamental things that we think have been broken. We're not trying to change the nature. This is such a quirky, interesting state, and its politics are different than anywhere else I've ever been. And that's it's a good thing, and sometimes perhaps a frustrating thing on both sides of the aisle. But we wanted to do small fixes, right? The police chase, I think, is the most simple one. The idea, when I tell friends of any political stripe, you know, in Washington, if someone rams their car into a police car and then drives off, the police are not allowed to chase them. That's just such a ridiculous, ridiculous thing that it's hard to find anyone that will defend that as a good idea. Yeah. And so the initiative simply restores the law to what it was before they made this law change in the legislature.
Yeah, I think it's a good point you're making, because you're right, and I hadn't thought of it that way. You know, it's not some huge overhaul of the state. It's just kind of going back to when things made a little bit more sense. So you mentioned Initiative 1474, Restore Police Pursuit. And as you said, it would go back right as it was before the changes in 2021.
Correct.
And then you have Initiative 1510, which you call Make Hard Drugs Illegal. And I imagine this is a fix for the Blake decision.
This is. And it's actually, there was two parts to it, because the legislature did something that I think was, and let's give the benefit of the doubt, let's say that it was well-intentioned. It has an unfortunate bad after effect. So the Blake decision basically said that if you are caught with illegal drugs, illegal substances, and you say, I don't know how they got on me, I don't know where they came from.
Not my pants.
What's that?
The not my pants defense.
Yes, not my pants defense. Somehow these are not mine. That the law didn't adequately address the possibility that it might have been planted on you. Mm-hmm. And so therefore you had to knowingly possess drugs. And because our law didn't allow for the knowingly defense, that the law itself was unconstitutional. And de facto, the Blake decision de facto made, with the exception of it's still federally illegal, it made hard drugs legal in the state. Now, the legislature then instead makes it a misdemeanor, but they still didn't fix the knowingly piece. Now, and I want to address both of these. So the knowingly in 1510, we put the words knowingly back into the text. The second thing, though, that we do is we change it back from a misdemeanor back to a felony. And the reason, one of the reasons this is really important, and I don't think people are always understanding the nuance, but one of the reasons is that most of the federal money that comes to help people who have serious drug addictions comes with a felony offense. So when you knock it down to a misdemeanor, that money, the state's ability to access that money goes away. If you've dealt with anybody that has a drug addiction, you know this is a terrible monkey on their back. It's not something they're just going to, most likely not going to be just one morning wake up and go, you know, I'm going to shake this thing. They need help. And I talked to quite a few police officers as well who said, it's not everybody that uses jail time to fix things, but sometimes that's the only thing that saves people from death. I mean, they get in this bad spiral. They get 6 months or however long it is out of circulation, and it cleans them up. And I don't know if that's the perfect solution itself, but I think it's a lot more compassionate than death on the streets in Seattle.
I agree with you. And I did a story once I'll never forget on this guy who these two SPD officers, partners downtown working the beat, had arrested him like 20 times. And it was like the 21st time or something that stuck. And we did this awesome story where, you know, he now has a wife, a kid. He's put on 40 pounds from, you know, when he was addicted, and he went and met these officers who the arrest really was the genesis for him turning his life around. And I agree with you. I don't think anybody thinks that's a perfect system, but you've got to do something. So with the initiatives, obviously with any initiative, the idea is to get signatures, but is this meant to be initiatives to the legislature, initiatives to go on a ballot? What's your hope for it?
That's a great question. There was back in the day, I think Republicans were sort of hopeful that, and back in the day, I mean by like before November, there was this hope that Republicans might have a shot at taking the legislature back. Clearly, that didn't happen. But with that in mind, when you do an initiative to the legislature, which is what these are, they go to the legislature and the legislature can vote them up or down, and then they go into law without any. The governor does not have a veto on these initiatives, and it's really sort of an interesting part of the Constitution here in Washington, because it's an avenue for if one party, let's just make up a scenario. Let's say one party had control for 40 years, and the other party was out of favor. They had a way to sort of address the inequity that might happen with the way the laws get made. And so you send it first to the legislature. Then there's a second piece that also is very elegant, and that's if the legislature ignores it, doesn't vote on it, votes against it, any of those things, or the legislature can also create their own version of any of them. Then in that case, so these all go to the legislature in January, if they qualify. And then, if they qualify, the legislature does their thing. They either, if they vote for them, they become law. If they ignore them or don't do anything with them, then they go on the ballot next November and they would go to the people. So it's kind of
Gotcha.
two bites at the apple with this process.
So you said if they qualify, where are you at? I'm assuming you're meaning if you get enough signatures, and January is right
Correct.
around the corner. So, will they qualify?
It's a good question. One of the big challenges. The honest answer is I don't know, and the reason I say that is that what has happened in this state is that the I usually use the word bloodsucking, but we'll just stop with not saying that and call consultants. The consultants come in, and they charge you millions and millions of dollars to try to get things qualified, and the effectiveness. The good thing is they get people out there that they've hired. They hire an army of people from out of state to come in and gather signatures. And back in the day, it was $1 million maybe to get one qualified. And then it was two, and then it was three, and then we were told this one was going to be four, and by the time we were ready to go, it was going to be $8 million to get one qualified.
Wow.
$8 million, that's just insane. And I said, well, surely we can get closer than that, not spending $8 million. What if we do it the old-fashioned way by getting people involved and getting volunteers out there? And so we didn't use consultants or paid canvassers. At the end, we've got some people now that are out there in some malls and a couple of places that we've got on payroll, but we've kept it very, very minimal, mostly relying on volunteers. The downside of using volunteers is that I don't know the number. We printed more than enough to do all the signatures. We've handed out more than enough. We're working together with Restore Washington, which is another group, Carrie Condotta and Mike McGee in Wenatchee. They've got a different, same as exact initiatives. We worked together so that we didn't do a circular firing squad. Got exact same initiatives, same numbers. They've been collecting independent of us. We've been collecting independent of them. We're collecting them as much as we can. And if there's anything that I could say right now, it's that anybody that has initiatives, even if the sheet's not completely filled out, get them turned in. That's our big push right now. We've just got another sort of 10 days to get everything collected and gathered. And one of the things I would let people know, they can mail them back into us, but really, if you go on the website, We have some highlighted places where we where you can both you can go and sign, but you can also turn in your initiatives into these sites. And I'm worried about the mail at this point. If people would find go to the website, we have highlighted on the very front page drop-off locations. We've had some very good, just looking at the page right now, you know, Anthony's Shoe Repair in Colville and Bellevue Gun Club and Big Boy Toys. I've got Brown's Garage
Yeah, you got a ton
in
of different, and these are just what businesses were like,
Shelton.
yeah, let us drop them off here.
Yes,
I
yes.
love
And
that.
we've got people going around. And we also, there's a phone number on the website as well. If you call us, we can have someone come pick them up.
Gotcha. And of course, there are a number of other initiatives that are part of this that have to do with cost of living, good governance, which is like an oxymoron these days, but I know you're trying. Brian, I do, just like I said, I think everybody's looking for that way to say, I think the pursuit law is the perfect example of that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense the way it is. And instead of yelling at it, I want to do something about it. And I think there's a lot of people who feel that way. And so I'm so glad you've invested your time and your energy and your money in trying to make things better. And so if people are interested in being part of it, time is ticking. So do
It
it
is.
now. But let's go Washington.com. Brian, anything else?
Well, I'd say the other thing, if you've got initiatives, turn them in. If you don't have initiatives, but you care about these, if you go on the website and you care about these ideas, do us a favor, grab, you can still pick up petitions. Go out, get 20 of your friends to sign them and get 20 of your friends to sign them, right? I mean, it's that viral nature of people that care about something that can make it happen. So, and then the third thing that is that we have the way that we've with 11 initiatives, you can imagine some people are in a hurry, so we'll get a wet signature on all 11 initiatives. They'll put their address and info that for the state on the first one, and then they'll leave the other ones blank. And so we've got just an incredible group of volunteers who are transcribing and the address from the first one onto the subsequent ones. And so if someone wants to be involved in that, they can call us and we're happy to have them help us and volunteer.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah, I know that my fiance has signed them. I haven't yet, so I feel a little bad. So I'll have to, I'm looking at drop-off locations right now next to me to see if I can do it today. So, Brian, again, I appreciate you hopping on and caring so
Thank
much
you,
about
Brandy.
making the state better.
Well, we appreciate what you're doing. I think you've hit the right spot in the state, really, with this trying to find common sense when we've tilted a little bit crazy too far to one way.
Yeah,
Thank
yeah.
you.
Absolutely. Now, one thing I do want to mention in the interest of full disclosure, Brian is also one of the key people behind Project 42, of which Future 42 is part of. And of course, I've become an ambassador for Future 42, and they sponsor a segment on the show every Monday. So I just wanted to kind of explain the relationship there. But Brian has become a friend of mine, and I really admire what he's doing here and saying, okay, we can't get the state legislature to use common sense on these issues. And so we're going to try to go through the people of Washington to get some of this stuff done. And actually, as I told Brian, I hadn't signed them yet. I hadn't had an opportunity to. So I looked at the locations, and right after I leave the studio today, there's a location not far from here. And I'm going to go, if they're still open, sign these initiatives. So look at the map. There's a ton of locations all across Western Washington. And if you have time, maybe grab a sheet and have some of your friends sign it and turn it back in quickly. But it needs to be done this year. So we're running out of time. It is Friday. That means it's time for our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Joining us is our Florida-based correspondent, my sister Miranda. Happy Christmas Eve Eve to you, ma'am.
Yes, happy Christmas Eve Eve to you too.
I again was making fun of your shirt behind the scenes today, but I just, you know, the color's not great.
Yeah, but like, you know, all greens matter. And I think that this green matches my red nails. And, you know, it's an ugly sweater, but Christmas is for ugly sweaters.
You're going to get me canceled for saying all greens matter.
Oh, no, I just really meant it in a green color way.
I got multiple messages saying I shouldn't be mean to you about your shirt last week.
I've been dealing this with for years. You've been mean to me about my shirts. I actually had another ugly green sweater you didn't like way back in the day. So this is just, true to form for me.
That is so funny because I know the exact sweater you're talking about. You're talking about a lime green ribbed turtleneck with two shades of lime green and a stripe between them, right?
That's the exact one. I wore it with a puffy vest.
it was ugly, right? Now I am just insecure because you're so pretty. You're obviously the prettier sister. And so I feel the need to bring you down a peg when you come on.
It's the way of the world.
All right, let's get our weekly dose of DeSantis in. What's Mayor or what's Governor Ron up to today?
So the Florida Supreme Court approved his petition to basically take Moderna and Pfizer to court about some possible misleading information and certain types of criminal charges that they want to bring against these companies for just, I guess, leading people astray and breaking a few actual rules in Florida and, using individuals in different companies that had more incentive to push this misleading information. And of course, that all comes out now, years later, but he's going to take him to court and the Supreme Court of Florida is going to put a grand jury together to look into this a little bit more. But we'll see what comes out of it. It wasn't a unanimous vote between the Supreme Court judges down here. There was five that said they were going to go ahead and put a grand jury together. One said no, and one did not participate, but it was still a leading majority.
People will look at this in a political lens. I think everything about COVID these days is looked at in a political lens. But one of the things, you know, my judgment of the DeSantis action aside, one of the things I will never understand is, you know, pre-pandemic, Big Pharma was the enemy. I mean, Big Pharma was contributing to the opioid crisis. We had attorneys general across the country suing Big Pharma. Big Pharma was the enemy, and the left treated them like an enemy. And then all of a sudden the pandemic happened and it was like, nope, Big Pharma can do no wrong. They're perfect angels. They're telling us the truth in every single instance. I just don't get that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like for people just expecting them to lead us in a situation that was as big as the pandemic was, where for years they've just had time to run wild on these small epidemics across the world in whatever way, shape, or form. But you're right. It was a total turn. And then now we're kind of flipping back the other way and figuring out, all right, now what wrongdoings have they brought upon us that we were like blinded to in the fear of the pandemic?
Yeah. And I think it was all political. I mean, you had, just like with the when it was quote unquote Trump's vaccine, Democrats are like, I'm not taking that. And then, when Trump was out of office, it's like, oh, everybody needs to get the vaccine or you're just like the enemy. And so I think in their when the right kind of came out as being opposed or more skeptical or critical of the vaccine. And again, I think politics played into all of this. Then all of a sudden the left was like, oh, well, we got to defend Big Pharma against these attacks from the right. And it was like, well, I thought you hated Big Pharma. I seem to recall. Yeah. So, I mean, anyone who's profiting off life-saving drugs, I'm just automatically going to be skeptical of. And I get that. Sorry, now I'm going on just a total tangent about Big Pharma. I don't want to say profiting. They develop these drugs. They deserve to earn a profit off the drugs. But I'm talking about like criminally high prices for insulin and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, in addition to the petition for the grand jury, DeSantis also announced the creation of a new health advisory administration in the state called the Public Health Integrity Committee. And it's going to be led by a couple top doctors in the state and a bunch of leading professionals. And the article that we're referencing actually goes on to list those people, which I think is kind of something that all states should have, is just like a third party checks and balances, somebody that just makes sure that the people that we are supposed to trust are trustable.
Okay, what else you got for us today?
So we had a very interesting committee meeting here in South Florida, in Broward County in particular. At the Broward County Commission meeting this week, three leather-clad women came in to make a petition that instead of spending $1 million of taxpayer money on waste management, they should spend some of that money on building a dungeon and certain pleasures.
A little sex dungeon. Okay, I've got the clip of this. Let's just play it.
Good evening, council peoples. You may call me mistress. I am here standing neutral to the motion approving an agreement for the proprietary purchase of yard waste processing and disposal. I do, however, find it interesting that you will spend almost $1 million to hide your secrets down the drain. Hiding that condom I know you used to cheat on your spouse with. So, I propose that you use a quarter of that mill to support doms and subs in Broward County, to build a dungeon created for us by us, the taxpayers and voting citizens. In closing, do not let this glamorous look distract you from doing your duty to take my demand. I look forward to spanking each and every single one of you at the new esteemed dungeon. You are dismissed.
Okay, thank you. And happy holidays to you. Anyone else wish to speak? There being none.
City Manager, are there any districts that have a dungeon?
Not that I know of.
Okay, I just wanted to check.
I like at the end when the guy's like, Merry Christmas, ma'am. What do you... So now, obviously, this was not a prank, but it was like a little put on. It's for like to advertise a club. Is that it?
Yeah, it's publicity for a club that's opening up here in Miami. And it's about as Florida as it gets that they would use this type of a tactic to get into the news, you know, because it's everywhere down here on all the local Instagram accounts and stuff like that. And it's pretty funny. They let these women make their point and they did it very quickly and professionally. And, you know, it's still business went on as usual. I think you guys have had some more riled up committee meetings without people like this in there. So,
well, I'm sure that the male councilman paid attention to this one very closely. Yeah. It's funny, in Seattle, we've got down to the council members here because they'll just, you know, be on their phones or their iPads and not paying attention to testimony. And maybe we need to send some women that are in head to toe tight leather and they'll pay attention. I don't know. One more. And it's just whenever you tell me, sometimes I'll get on the phone with you and you'll be like, oh, it's cold today. And I'm like, okay, it's 65 degrees. I'm like, okay. So today I'll play the video. I needed to come into the podcast studio because, you know, the show doesn't rest just because there's a storm. My vehicle was encrusted in a layer of ice. I've never seen. And we grew up in one of the coldest places in the country. And I've never had my vehicle encrusted in so much ice. And then you proceed to pitch me stories for the day. And you, again, as normal, were complaining that it's really cold in Florida. And the government has released advice for, what is it? For the Florida freeze.
Yes. To be fair, let me prequel this conversation with that. We are very used to sunny, beautiful 80 degree weather. So when the humidity goes away, and the sun goes away a little bit behind a cloud and it's below 60, it's really cold for us people down here. So there are parts of Florida this week that are going to get well below 40 degrees. And, you know, we have farmers and crops and things like that that aren't always prepared for that, like frost advisories and stuff like that. So the government put out a few tips about keeping your water running in a slow drip if it drops below the freezing level, and covering your plants and just doing some different things around your house that can like help you prevent getting cold at night when it drops to like below 30, which for Floridians, it's pretty cold. Even in Miami, we're supposed to get down to 40s tonight. And I don't know if I'm ready. I'm going to have to pull out a nice green jacket to go over my sweater.
Here in the Northwest, a lot of homes don't have air conditioning because it's just sort of, it doesn't usually get that hot, although we've had some pretty hot days this past summer. Do a lot of houses there have heat, or is that sort of not something that's normal?
In all the newer homes, it's something that's normal because I think when you put in central air, like you put in heating too, because that's just, you know, what people do in a modern world. But I have lived in apartments that did not have heaters that get very cold because we don't build houses with insulation and the preparedness of cold weather things. I mean, there's insulation to keep the cold weather in your house when you have your air conditioner on. But I don't know. I get pretty cold at night, but I've never turned my heater on in this house, but I know I have one. I'll turn the air off.
Well, and we also have the iguanas to worry about. We talked about this on the show before, that if you see an iguana, laying motionless in the sidewalk, it's probably not dead.
Yeah, it's a good chance it's not dead at all. It's just very, it's cold. So its body's shut down in a state of almost hibernation to protect itself. So the news encourages us in this time of the year to drag these poor helpless creatures into the sunshine so that they can reheat and warm up and climb a tree and get to safety, because they will fall out of trees. Like this one article literally says they can fall on people's heads, which is probably true, but the same as a coconut, you know, it's probably very rare that it's going to happen. But they do, you do see them kind of like laid out and you're like, what's wrong with that thing? And it just needs, it needs a little sunshine. So
yeah, I can just see me though. I have the luck where I'd go to Florida and get hit in the head with with a frozen iguana. That's my life.
Resonate with them, because I'm like, if you see me laid out in the cold, pull me into the sunshine too, because I've been down here for a little too long. I can't do that cold weather for very much time.
Yeah. What's your, I guess we have one episode of Florida Report left before the new year, but have you thought of your New Year's resolution?
Yeah, I actually have a lot of resolutions that more revolve around my business and growing my business and what I do for a living down here, which when you work for yourself, it's, there are a lot of personal resolutions that kind of reside in those type of resolutions, because it's a lot of time management things and just self-preservation as I get a little older, making sure that I eat healthy, take care of myself, stay active. Pretty normal stuff, but it's always nice to like reaffirm what you would like to do with yourself in the next coming year and get a fresh start.
Yeah, I luckily tackled my weight loss before the new year. So I did my resolution pre 2023. So for maybe once in my adult life, that isn't going to be my New Year's resolution.
That's actually really exciting. So now you have room to make a whole different resolution you can stick to.
Yeah.
For the
I'll think of one. All right, Miranda, thank you. Merriest of Christmases.
Merry Christmas. Have a good one. I hope it doesn't snow you guys in and get you stuck in any travel plans or whatever have you out in the Pacific Northwest.
Too late.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
That's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense. Come back. As I mentioned earlier, the show should be fixed on Apple Podcasts. So go in there. If you don't see the updated episodes, maybe unfollow the page, refollow the page. I appreciate your patience in that regard and for letting me know about it, because obviously I don't go back and listen to my own podcast after I like tape it and post it. And so I didn't see that these new episodes weren't populating, but I got messages from you guys and we were thankfully able to get it taken care of. Happy holidays to all of you. Merry Christmas. I hope you get some time with friends and family over the weekend. We'll have a regular Sunday newsletter on Sunday. And also just be careful out there. It is so nasty. And Miranda, you know, it's going to get cold in Florida, whatever, her whining about 50 degree temperature. But we dealt with, like, whoever the god of ice is was really pissed off last night. And things are crazy. So just make sure that you're safe out there. And I'll see all of you on Monday.